It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
Live from Everywhere USA, it's Fox Across America with Jimmy Failla.
You are listening to Fox Across America, normally hosted by my friend and pal, the great Jimmy Failla. Today, Todd Pyro, that's my name. I'm filling in for my buddy today. I do that little show between 5 and 6 a.m. every morning, weekday morning, that is. The show is called Fox and Friends First. I do it with my amazing co-anchor, Carly Shimkus. We bring it to you bright and early. But now I am with you in the noon hour for the next 3 hours, and I am excited to do it. All right. Obviously, one thing that everybody's talking about today is the State of the Union. And before we get into it, I just want everybody to take a deep breath in. You smell that? That's unity. You can smell the unity across America right now. This is Fox Across America. Joe Biden promised unity, and he delivered it last night. Oh, wait. No, he didn't. No, that's the opposite of what he did. There was no unity delivered last night. This was the annual get off my lawn speech, and it was more campaigny than ever in last night's version. I understand we're in a campaign, and I understand there are often hints of campaigning in your State of the Union. But what is supposed to be a message to all Americans wasn't even a message to Democrats. It was a message to the elite Democrats who want to prop Joe Biden up in office. And they want 4 more years of this. I know a lot of Democrats that don't want 4 more years of this. And of course, a lot of Republicans, if not most, if not all Republicans, don't want 4 more years of Joe Biden. So what did we get last night? We got a lot of yelling. We got a lot of blaming, and we got a lot of references to not Donald J. Trump, but his predecessor. Roll number two.
My predecessor, a former Republican president, tells Putin, quote, do whatever the hell you want. My predecessor and some of you here seek to bury the truth about January 6th. Many of you in this chamber and my predecessor are promising to pass a national ban on reproductive freedom. A president, my predecessor, failed the most basic presidential duty. My predecessor, and many in this chamber, my Republican friends owe it to the American people, get this bill done. My predecessor, but unlike my predecessor, I know who we are as Americans.
Notice how the word predecessor sort of devolved over the course of the speech. We went from my predecessor to toward the end there. But we could spend 3 hours attacking the president's mental acuity. We could attack the low bar that people are like, he survived. It was a spectacular speech. He didn't die. He didn't keel over. But I want to focus on the specifics of what he said, especially in that montage that we just played. He talks about Putin. He talks about Donald Trump and this notion that Donald Trump and Vladimir Putin are working together, that Donald Trump is a puppet of Putin. If that is the case, then why, pray tell me, has Vladimir Putin stated repeatedly that he wants Joe Biden back in office? Why would he want Joe Biden if Trump was his puppet that he could control? We all know the reason of that. It's because Joe Biden projects weakness wherever he goes, and it has allowed Vladimir Putin to run roughshod over the world, specifically Europe, specifically Ukraine, and the potential for incursions beyond that. That's the reason we're in this position we're in. That's the reason Vladimir Putin engages in hostage diplomacy. That's the reason that not just Vladimir Putin, but Xi Jinping and other bad guys around the world see now as the moment to take advantage of America. And they viewed it that way for the last 3 years. That will continue if Joe Biden is elected for another 4-year term, despite this hand-wringing by the Democrats that Donald Trump is in the pocket of dictators. It's gaslighting at its highest level. Next, So much fear-mongering still over January 6th. Can we be real for a moment? Democracy is not at stake for a rally gone bad. No Republican's going to sit here and say January 6th was a great day. It wasn't good. It shouldn't have happened. It was a horrible look for America. But if you think that a bunch of 60-year-olds in puffy jackets and jeans are going to overthrow the United States government, I hope that when that time comes and there is an actual attempt to overthrow the government, that those are the people doing it, because I'm pretty confident that that rebellion will be quelched pretty quickly by the fit 22-year-olds in the various armed services. So the fear-mongering that continues to this day, that democracy was under attack that day, and Republicans and Donald Trump are attacking democracy still to this day, just substitute Democrats in for Republicans and Donald Trump threatening democracy. Which party is engaging in intense lawfare? Which party is trying to keep their number one opponent off the campaign trail through various court cases? Which party is trying to silence you because you may share conservative beliefs? Is that the Republicans? No. That's the Democrats. So this is, again, we should, instead of calling this the get off my lawn speech, the campaign of the union speech, I'm going to call this the gaslighting speech, because that's exactly what it was. Let's go to abortion now. The president never, I guess, did not say the word abortion during the speech. He had talked about it in terms of women's rights being under attack. They're at stake. Okay. Somebody who is in a house of women, I should be concerned about this. But when I actually do the research and don't just listen to the insane posturing by Joe Biden and the Democrats, I realize women's rights are not at stake because normal people don't think you should be allowed to abort a baby at 9 months. So yes, if there is an abortion ban that says, oh, a woman is giving birth on the table and that baby is about to come out and that woman decides, I want to abort this baby. Yeah, I think that's wrong. Call me a Neanderthal, Joe Biden. Republicans are going to put forth a plan that makes sense. Donald Trump has said as much. It is not going to destroy women's rights, because there are a lot of women in the Republican Party who won't stand for that. And no man who is a son of a woman, a father of a woman, or married to a woman wants to do anything to hurt that woman. That's the fundamental fallacy of the Democrats' position. Yet they use it for fear-mongering, and to their credit, they've done a better job on messaging than Republicans have done so far. So Republicans, wake up. You see the playbook. You know what the playbook is. They did the playbook in 2022. They did the playbook even in 2023, which was an off year. This is the important election. Republicans need to get this straight. Whether it means a woman for VP, whether it means a woman in so many different races, or whether it means men knowing how to message on this, you got to figure it out. And you saw the playbook played out in the last couple weeks with the hullabaloo over IVF. Democrats and Joe Biden have made it sound like every Republican is against IVF, okay? 99.9999999% of Americans support IVF. It is the most bipartisan issue, not just in the halls of Congress, not just in the state houses of every single state in our union, but among the population of 330 million people in our country. It is a non-issue. Yes, based upon the law, Alabama Supreme Court made their decision, but it was then sent back to the legislature and the governor to create legislation to make sure that right was installed, basically that IVF was restored. And that's exactly what they did. You heard Katie Britton, the response to the State of the Union, say, "Okay, Ivy, sign that thing in a nanosecond." Why? Because everybody recognizes, especially the pro-family party of Republicans, that IVF creates more beautiful babies. So you want more beautiful babies? You sign the legislation. This is a non-issue. But you hear how Democrats are demonizing Republicans. Republicans kind of caught with your hands behind your back. You need to go on the offensive. You need to say, we support this. We're going to sign it in all 50 states. You know who did that? Donald J. Trump. So follow suit on the president. And when it comes to the gaslighting, it continued with regard to the violence that we saw in 2020. Joe Biden literally accused Donald Trump of presiding over that violence and then said something, America is safer than when he took office. Really, Joe Biden? Because when I think about the violence in 2020, I remember it all in, wait for it, the Democrat-run cities that decided to get rid of all their cops, that decided defund the police was the way to go, and we needed to make sure that criminals felt respected. In the years that have followed, many of those criminals who did really bad things have won lawsuits because we need to make sure that these criminals feel even more respected in the months and years following their, you know, destruction of our once great American cities. And when Joe Biden says America is safer than when he took office, what numbers are you using? Because every morning between 5 and 6 a.m. on Fox News Channel, on my show, Fox and Friends First, we air actual numbers, actual data with regard to a segment that we do on Philadelphia, whether it's a segment we do on New York, L.A., you name the city. We have data specific to that city. And what does that data show? Since Joe Biden took office, those cities have gotten progressively more dangerous. Are we making it up? Or is Joe Biden lying? I think you know the answer to that. And then let's not forget the end of that montage that we aired. So much of it was about the border. A border discussion that Joe Biden, of course, waited 40 minutes to get to because, you know, it's not like it's the number one issue in every single poll that comes out right now, battling with economy. Right now, it is above economy, but that could change. The point being that immigration, illegal immigration, the border crisis is top of mind for Americans. And the fact that you waited 40 minutes to address it, you addressed Snickers before you addressed abortion. Before you addressed immigration, speaks volumes. And then he gives all these ideas, right? We need to do this. We need to do that. We need to do X, Y, Z. Joe, none of these ideas would be one bit necessary. Not necessary at all if you just enforced the laws that were on the books. If you had just said, we're not going to change a thing that Donald J. Trump did when it comes to the border. If you had done that, this would be a non-issue because you wouldn't have invited the mass migration and illegal border crossings at both the southern and northern border that we saw. Hence, we're in the position that we're in, and it is a disaster, much like that speech from one Joseph Robinette Biden last night. We're just getting started here on Fox Across America with Jimmy Failla, your fill-in host for the day, Todd Pyro. More after this.
A show so good, people don't know what to think.
This feels weird. Are you sure this is legal?
I don't know. It's fun though, isn't it?
Fox Across America with Jimmy Failla.
Guys, are you the same guy that you were 10 years ago? Everybody's been there. You wake up one morning, you feel like you're getting old, man. Stuff hurts. What do I do? One idea is to use the powerful testosterone booster in Nugenix Total T because it will revive your energy. It'll power up the workouts, might even put the old fire back in the bedroom. Hey, girl, your old self is back. You'll feel amazing on this stuff. So tap the brakes on the aging process because every day that passes is a day you lose testosterone. That means less muscle, means less energy, and it does mean less get up and go in the bedroom. And are you really ready to lose all of it? The shape, the muscle, the energy. Are you ready to get old? Okay, you don't have to. You can slow it down with Nugenix Total T. It boosts free and total testosterone. It helps you get the old fire back at work, in the gym, and in the bedroom. Nugenix Total T Testosterone Booster with Tesner. It'll help you turn back the clock and re-energize your life and prove it to yourself. Try Nugenix Total T before you buy. There is nothing to lose. Get a complimentary bottle of Nugenix Total Tea when you text 231-231 and enter the keyword Jimmy. Text now and get a bottle of Nugenix Thermo X, the newest and most powerful fat incinerator ever with key ingredients to help you lose fat and get lean fast. It is absolutely free. Your complimentary bottle awaits. Text 231-231 and enter keyword Jimmy. Text 231-231 and enter the keyword Jimmy.
Texting enrolls you into recurring automated text messages. Consent not required to purchase. Message and data rates apply. Number one doctor recommended brand by primary care physicians based on an independent survey conducted by IQVIA 2022.
We're back. on Fox Across America. I am Todd Pyro, host of Fox and Friends First, along with Carly Shimkus, in today for the great Jimmy Fallon. Joining us right now is Mark Brnovich. You may remember him as the Arizona Attorney General. Mark, great to chat with you as always. How are you, sir?
I am doing well, Todd, and I will just say that congratulations to you, because you must have taken whatever Joe Biden took last night, because you have had a long day with your TV show in the morning, and then now you got 3 hours of radio. So you're doing an amazing job, and you have lots of energy.
I appreciate that. And yes, I mean, the bar for me has been set similar to Joe Biden. If I survive these 3 hours, I'm going to get a lot of accolades in the press, it seems. That's what I'm told. That's what my sources are telling me.
Mark, don't scream at me.
I'm sorry. I'm from Jersey. We scream a lot. This is going to be a get off your lawn segment. Mark, back in the day, there used to be a little conference known as the Pac-12, and it used to have a bunch of teams in it, two of which were in Arizona State and Arizona. And once upon a time, a gazillion years ago, when I was going to law school, I went to a little tiny law school named UCLA Law School, and they play a rival named USC. And the coach of USC is a gentleman by the name of Lincoln Riley. He was invoked many times yesterday, once by the president, when he referenced Lincoln Riley during the State of the Union. Now, fortunately for USC fans, Lincoln Riley is still alive. But this underscores the issue, because the name he was trying to say was Lakin Riley, a young lady cut down in the prime of her life by an illegal migrant who should not have been here. Mark, he had one name he had to get right during that entire State of the Union, and he failed.
And obviously, it's a terrible tragedy. And as you know, Todd, I was on the front line, whether it was fighting the Biden administration to force them to continue building the wall, when we sued them over Title 42 to stop the rescission of that, when I went to the U.S. Supreme Court and argued that when he rescinded the public charge rule, where he was giving benefits to people entering this country illegally, we know that what he did is he incentivized and he decriminalized people coming in this country through his executive orders. And as a result of that, not only a young woman in Georgia is dead, but thousands of Americans are dying every day because of the flood of fentanyl coming into this country, because of heroin coming into the country, and because the cartels have seized control of our southern border. And you know, and I know other people are talking about this now, but we've been talking about it for years, that there are people on the terror watch list. There are tens of thousands of people coming in from countries that are hostile to the United States, that are not being vetted, that we don't know where they're at in this country. And this is just the tip of the iceberg. And when I heard Joe Biden last night mispronounced her name, I thought to myself that his lack of integrity is only surpassed by his ineptitude. And as a first-generation American, it breaks my heart to see a president that's so hostile and divisive. And the fact that people on the left won't even recognize that that was such a divisive speech last night. And, you know, I was watching it with one of my daughters, and I just said, I mean, even Bill Clinton wouldn't have given a speech like that. You know, it just is crazy to me that you have a president of the United States in a State of the Union. This isn't the DNC speech. In a State of the Union, starts off by talking about Ukraine, and then he basically insults half the American voters and does nothing to try to unify us. And he basically lied. He lied about a bunch of stuff.
It was beyond lying. It was gaslighting, because a lie is when you tell something that you know is true. Gaslighting is when you do that, but blame the other side for the very thing that you're doing. And that's what all Democrat policies are right now, and specifically those coming from the White House. My question, Mark, and maybe you can shed some insight, because I work in New York, obviously. There is a bubble there. We have to be realistic. And I think we do a good job at Fox of trying to get out of that bubble. But in reality, you know, I am not sitting there talking with Arizonans every day. And I understand all 50 states are border states. I get that. But you are literally in a border state. So in 30 seconds here, are people giving Republicans flack for the way they handled the border bill? And are they buying this Democratic nonsense?
No, I mean, look, what's the old line? Who are you going to believe, Joe Biden or your lying eyes? And the reality is, most people know that people like myself, we've been fighting, we've been suing, we've been calling the border an invasion. And when I did that, you know, a year and a half ago, people said that it was racist and divisive, whatever. But the reality is, we Republicans were on the front lines of addressing, trying to address this problem, identifying this issue, and we were ringing the alarm bell before so many other people were. And I said,
and you were one there.
Ago. Every state will be.
You were one of the first
state.
Ones and on so, the front line. Got to leave it there. Mark Brnovich, thank you, sir. More Fox Across America after this.
Wyndham Hotels and Resorts makes travel possible for all. Whether it's the long haulers looking for a great cup of coffee, a roomier rest for the on a whim road trippers, or a place to make summer memories with the whole family. No matter who you are, where you're going, or why, with 24 trusted brands to choose from like La Quinta, Days Inn, and Super 8, your Wyndham is waiting. Get the lowest price at WyndhamHotels.com. Restrictions apply. Visit website for more details.
You are listening to Fox Across America. I am your fill-in host, Todd Pyro, from Fox and Friends First, in for my friend, Jimmy Failla. And now I'd like to introduce one of my favorite guests. You heard Bobby Brown there in the introduction, using singing My Prerogative. Well, the gentleman I have on next used to be the head of the Bobby Brown Fan Club at Nutley High School in Nutley, New Jersey. Please welcome America's accountant, Dan Geltrude. Dan, it's your prerogative. You're going to do what you want to do.
I absolutely am, Todd. So thanks for having me on today.
My pleasure. Unconfirmed rumors about Dan being the president of the Bobby Brown Fan Club. But let's get to brass tacks here. We've been on air for about 35 minutes so far, and we have broken down the State of the Union and the lies that we heard in it, from abortion to IVF to the border. We haven't even touched on the economy, money issues, money lies that the president told on a national stage last night. You're America's accountant. You're our money guy. Take it away, Dan. What were you hearing last night that just had your ears ringing and thinking to yourself, what is this guy saying?
Well, to start with, when he talked about all the jobs that have been added over the last 3 years, if I remember correctly, I think he said like 15 million. So talk about taking something out of context. So we go back 3 years and we're in the middle of a pandemic, a 100-year pandemic, and now we're at the place we are, and he's saying that all these jobs have been added. Well, you really need to be specific and say all those jobs have been recovered, right? These are jobs that used to exist that went away for a period of time during the pandemic, and it's natural once the pandemic is over that they would come back. However, Todd, let's look at some other things. You have major corporations now having significant layoffs, and the reason that they're having these layoffs is because wage inflation is forcing them to cut back. You know, corporations, Todd, are going to look at that wage number and they're going to compare it to what their sales are, right? And they have to be proportionate. So when you have a situation where your wages are growing far too large, well, you're going to cut those back. And what happened during the pandemic is many corporations said, you know, we need to invest in either outsourcing or into artificial intelligence and figure out how to reduce our workforce. So to me, that's the one thing that stood out, was when he talked about jobs. Those job numbers, that wasn't real.
Yeah. Can we talk about the dirty little secret with corporate America? I thought you touched upon it beautifully. I want to drive this point home. The corporations are going to hit what I'm going to call their profit numbers. I know that's not the – we could call it EBIT or whatever. They're going to hit their profit numbers one way or another, whether it's with increased output thanks to jobs or with smaller output but fewer jobs. They're still going to hit their number. And America works better when these companies are producing more with more jobs. That's when we thrive as a country. We don't thrive in the other way, because then unemployment goes up and a few are making money and a lot of others are not. And so that point needs to be driven home. Also, I don't know if you heard it in there, Dan, the annual tax credit of about $400 a month. I hear, hey, it's another Joe Biden bribe. Did you get that same thing?
Of course. Listen, everybody loves free money, except those that have to pay for it, right? Because there's no such thing as free money. That comes out of taxpayers' pockets. So what happens there, it is just a redistribution of wealth, which when you give people free money, which means it hasn't been earned, what's the incentive to work? Now, of course, listen, Todd, I'm sure you agree with me that there are people, our citizens that need help, and we need to help them. But that doesn't mean that you just start giving out money to people who are able-bodied and can work. Those people need to work, which means you need to create jobs. And another thing I want to bring up related to your point about corporations making money, you know, they have a fiduciary responsibility to their shareholders. And everybody's involved with that because we have these stocks in our 401ks. So we need corporate America to do well. Well, here's the thing. When you start taxing them, you know what they do? They pass that along to their consumers, which of course then creates more inflation, and the cycle continues. All these decisions have consequences, and it seems like nobody's actually thinking these things through.
Yeah, and when you increase those taxes on corporations, what else happens? They cut jobs, and then that vicious cycle that I just went through continues. I love this, you know, in the bribe category. He says he wants to make college more affordable, but eliminating student debt the way he's doing it makes the cost higher, because if you make something free, the cost goes up, right? I mean, it's classic socialism. And let's also not forget that he bragged about ignoring the Supreme Court, you know, the law of the land, without using those words. I do love the gaslighting on inflation, because it's like, we dropped it from 9% to what it is today. Well, who rose it to 9%, Joe? It was you. And he talks about how we brought the country back from the lows, the economic lows of the pandemic. It was the Democrats and the Democrat administrators, the Democrat politicians, the governors, the legislators who added all of the restrictions on ordinary Americans, created the shutdowns, prevented people from earning a living. And so then for you to say, when I took office, those went away. Well, yes, the pandemic went away and we recovered. And yes, at some point, you were going to face a rising up of people who weren't allowed to work for maybe at that point 2 years. So, yeah, it made sense to do away with those restrictions and let people get back to work. So to take credit for any of this is such a lie. And that's what's so frustrating to me, Dan.
Well, you know, Todd, let me bring up something to follow up with what you said about inflation and what the president was saying. And he talked about, well, it was 9% and now it's 3%. Here's what's deceiving about that number is that when they talk about that inflation number, that's a year over year. That is not taking into consideration the cumulative effect of inflation from where we were 3 years ago until now. And no matter how you want to spin that, Todd, there is no way to convince people that when they're going to the grocery store this year that they're doing better. They're just doing less bad. Now, is that winning? No, that's not winning. That's lipstick on a pig, right? It's still a pig. So you have to look at all that cumulative inflation. So what you were paying 3 years ago for whatever product and what you're paying now, maybe it's only up 3% over last year, but cumulatively it's up 12% or 15% or whatever that number is. So again, it's very, very deceiving.
Looking ahead, this was obviously a speech, talk is cheap. These are just words, right? Between now and Election Day, give us a snapshot of the economy. And I certainly do not want to make this sound like you and I and other people are rooting against the economy, because we're participants in it. I got to put food on the table just like everybody. So I do want your honest assessment of what happens between now and Election Day. And is this going to benefit Joe Biden or is it going to benefit Donald J. Trump?
Well, I think the answer here, Todd, is to predict what's going to happen, we don't know. But if we look at the scenario and say, well, if the economy does improve, and it has improved because, as you said, we came out of a pandemic, so it's a natural process. If Biden is able to convince people, which I think would be tough without the support of an improving economy, which really goes back to people's purchasing power. If people really feel they're doing better, which means they have more money because it costs them less to get the things they need to live, yes, then Joe Biden will likely benefit. Do I think it's going to turn around between now and November? No, I don't. I don't think it's going to turn around. And therefore, the economic issues appear to me to be on the side of Donald Trump. And I think Joe Biden is going to have a really difficult time if he's going to campaign on Bidenomics. I think that's a loser for him. And Trump should be out there also saying, hey, Bidenomics, Bidenomics, try to sell that. I don't think people are buying.
Well, one thing that I've been warning Americans to be on the lookout for is an artificial rise in the stock market. Now, I'm getting way over my skis here. I am literally reporting this to you because I have heard it said by people who are actual experts in money. I am not one of those people. But I don't need to understand the underlying technology with how stocks are bought and sold in huge numbers to understand that that could happen. There are very, very powerful individuals on the Democratic side who have a lot of money to make that happen and could artificially inflate the stock market. When you look at the way the stock market is positioned now, really, really well, I might add. I look at my statements. I'm happy. I'm like, woohoo, we're hitting bigger numbers in that first number. And it's not just bigger numbers in the ones that are, you know, after the decimal point. So I'm excited about this. But do you look at this and say, this is artificial?
Well, to start with, Todd, the economy and the stock market are not the same thing. When you have a majority of this country that are living paycheck to paycheck, they're not playing the stock market. Now, they may have some money in retirement, and when they look at their statements, they're saying, hey, I'm doing better. But I don't think that's how people are viewing it. So the stock market is doing well, and it's likely that that could continue through Election Day. And would that help Joe Biden? Yes. But that is not going to be the issue that most Americans are going to be deciding on in terms of how they're feeling economically. You know, there's a lot of people right now that are hurting, Todd, and the stock market is the last thing on their mind. You know what they're thinking? How am I making my mortgage payment? How am I making my rent payment? How am I putting food on the table? That's what they're thinking of.
Are they thinking junk fees? Because the president and his people really seem to think that junk fees are all any of us are talking about on a day in a day out basis. Now, admittedly, when I go to a hotel with my beautiful wife and we check in and we use points because I'm cheap, but I get that charge for like the resort fee of $35 to $50, am I happy about it? No. Especially if I'm not using any of the resources of the resort that are included in that resort fee. But side note, if I am paying the resort fee, I make sure I take advantage of it and then I abuse the system. But point being, when you're in the money business, you have clients. Are they coming in, Geltrude, the junk fee is killing me?
No, not at all. As a matter of fact, when he started talking about junk fees, I actually had to think, what's he exactly talking about? Now, are junk fees annoying? Absolutely. Is that what's on people's mind? Not at all. I would say a majority of the people didn't even actually understand what he was talking about when he was making reference to junk fees. So junk fees, do we like them? No, we hate them. Are they necessary? Are they gouging? I don't know. Maybe, maybe. But that is not what's on people's minds. Not at all. He missed that point completely.
I'll make you a deal, Joe Biden. If you have a choice between one of two, you can only do one of these two. You can't do both because we all know you can't walk and chew gum at the same time. But if you have to make a choice between closing up the border and getting rid of junk fees on behalf of all Americans, go for the border one, because you know what? If I have to pay the random time I get to go to on vacation now because kids, you didn't tell me that, Dan, by the way, sidebar, when you have kids that are 3 and 1, you can't go on vacation. Anyway, moving past that, the next time I do go on vacation, and if I have to pay a junk fee, all right, I'll pay it. I would rather be able to go to a place, you know, in the southern part of our country safely and not have to worry about illegal immigrant crime and maybe pay the junk fee. If I can do that, we'll be in good shape. Dan Geltrude, final question for you.
Mm-hmm.
Are you ready?
I'm ready.
What are they talking about in Nutley, New Jersey? I'm not trying to get too personal, but when you think of a town that is middle America, people can say, oh, it's in New Jersey. It's, you know, it's a liberal bastion. Nutley, I would say, is the most right down the middle town I have ever seen. What is the number one economic issue to the people in Nutley?
Todd, you're exactly right. Nutley, New Jersey is down the middle. You have Republicans, you have Democrats, and you have independents and people all over the place. So you can't put us on one side or the other. And you know what I hear most people talking about? Because literally in the center of our town is a grocery store, ShopRite. And what I hear people talking about is how much food has gone up. It's inflation. That's what's on people's mind. I'll tell you that right now. There's not even a close second.
Yeah, the ShopRite in Nutley, New Jersey, it does need to be known that that's where both of my grandparents learned to fight, because it's a very, very violent place. The one there on Center Street, right? Center Street?
Yeah, it's on Franklin Avenue.
Franklin Avenue, I apologize. But yeah, that's the one. Both of my grandparents learned to throw elbows there, because you need to, especially around the holidays. Dan Geltrude, thank you for joining. Appreciate it. America's Accountant, let you know the monetary lies, the fiscal lies in Joe Biden's State of the Union. We'll be back with Fox Across America after this.
The critics have spoken.
You do that again and I'll break every bone in your body.
You're listening to Fox Across America with Jimmy Failla.
We're back on Fox Across America. Todd Pyro in for Jimmy Failla. We're going to take a caller, Kevin from Hampton Roads, Virginia. Kevin, what's on your mind?
Hey, Todd. Yeah, I only get to see you when you're on Greg Gutfeld's show. I'm not up during your regular show, but you're a very talented guy.
Thank you, sir.
I got a couple, two things I want to mention, illegal immigration and the IVF issue. Number one, you probably can't say this, but I'm going to say it. The Democrats are shameless liars, and by Democrats, I don't mean their voters. I mean in Congress, Senate, news media. I did predict, you know, 2 years ago, what they're going to do is let in as many illegal immigrants as they can, and then right before the election, they're going to try to flip it and act like they were the ones who always opposed it all along, and it was the Republicans who didn't go along with them.
I have no problem with using the word liar. Yesterday was a speech filled with lies. You can't describe it any other way, Kevin. That's what it was. And I think your point on saying this was exactly the plan all along is very, very smart. We had a number of guests that obviously are in this space, are in the illegal immigration space, who said the same thing. So you are spot on there. Quickly, before we have to run, your point on IVF.
Well, I mean, that guy, what was he thinking in Florida? Right, 8 months before election, you bring that up, and now they're blaming all Republicans for it. He could have waited 8 months to bring it up.
Interesting point. Look, never put it past Republicans to mess up something good. They need to get on this messaging on IVF quickly, because like I mentioned off the top, 99.99999% of Americans are all in agreement on this. Don't give the Democrats another campaign issue that they can, wait for it, to your point, Kevin, lie to the American people about. Kevin from Hampton Roads, we appreciate it. More Fox Across America after this.
Live from everywhere USA, it's Fox Across America with Jimmy Failla.
Happy Friday, Nation. You are listening to Fox Across America. My name is Todd Pyro. I am normally the host of Fox and Friends First alongside the lovely Carly Shimkus. But today, I am in for my good friend, my buddy, my pal, Jimmy Failla. And boy, do we have a special treat for you all right now. Joining us live via phone is producer. Can I get a pronouncer on this guy's name? It's James Failla. Is that what I'm reading in my notes? James Failla. Who is this?
I feel like I just did a hit on Waters World. That's some pronunciation.
Jimmy Failla, the man who should be in this chair, is joining us by phone. He's in Fort Lauderdale for a gig, series of gigs. And Jimmy, let me just start off by saying I am way better at my show than I am at yours.
You stop it. You did great at your show. Do you know I watched it on the plane this morning? On the way down, because I had a very early flight, and I had that flight, Todd. Do you know every once in a while you get on a flight and you realize you're just making a public appearance, meaning the guy in your row is a Fox fan, and you're now going to answer 3 hours and 15 minutes of Fox questions? So I just had one of those on the way down, so I just threw on the show, and we just sat there and talked about everybody you had on, and we had a couple of good laughs. I watched you, Cheryl Cassoni, and Shimkus get after it. And I believe Concha was the closer, right?
We brought in Concha as the closer. Concha is our Mariano Rivera. Brought him out of the bullpen, played Enter Sandman. He comes in. Ding, 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 ding.
Wait. So you're telling me he also comes in like they shot him up with B12 before a speech?
Yes. I read on – first of all, I love the Babylon Bee. I think some of their headlines are amazing. The one that I love, all of D.C. is out of stimulants. Because of the amazing speech that we heard last night. Let's get to that speech, because I'm going to frame it differently for you here, Jimmy.
Mm-hmm.
The bigger disaster for the good guys, as you like to say. One, you have multiple choice here. Yet another United Airlines plane having a problem just this day, like within the last couple of hours, skinning off the runway there in Houston Airport. Of course, it was a Boeing 737. That's number one. Number two, yep. Russell Wilson reportedly meeting with the Giants. Or three, that's not a joke. Numbers one and two are not jokes. Neither was number three, Joe Biden's speech. Have at it, Jimbo.
Well, listen, Russell Wilson to the Giants isn't a disaster for me because my son Lincoln is a huge Steelers fan, and I want nothing to do with Russell Wilson. Nothing. So if he goes to the Giants and just lampoons the next half of your decade, I can live with it, you know. The United thing's actually a win because the door stayed on the Boeing plane this time. you gotta take the victories where you can get them
right.
on those Boeing planes. You know what's funny? When they were mad at Nikki Haley for being on the board of Boeing, it shouldn't have been about the crony capitalism. It should have just been about the ineptitude of the airline, of the plane anyway. But the Biden thing, okay, listen, for what he was going for, it was a successful night. Because his people, he definitely rallied his people. Like, as you noticed, he opened the speech. It was like he was giving the State of the Union for the wrong country. Because if you check the boxes, he opens on Ukraine, I promise nobody cares. Like, 95% of the audience doesn't care. Doesn't mean we support Putin. Doesn't mean we want them to trample Europe. It just means it's the State of the Union. 70% of the country thinks we're going in the wrong direction, and he opens on Ukraine. Okay, I promise you, you lost eyeballs for that. Then he morphed into, you know, January 6th, the patron saint of Democratic high holidays. And then he went into, I believe, abortion from there, whatever it was. But the point is, it was bad for people, you know, if you like, you tuned in for America or you were looking for, you know, the unity he had promised. But it was good for his base because they shot him up with enough B12 that they can all deny now for the next 3 months what we all continue to say about his motor skills. A little slow, okay? Like, I know glaciers who think he needs to move quicker.
Beyond the base, though, Jimmy, I think what he was trying to do is quell the mutiny among progressives, among the far left, because some of the three key takeaways, helping Gaza, not Israel, no executive action on immigration, and to your point, the perils of democracy. I mean, those are the biggest hits, some of them, of the far left. And to the overall point, I think Kevin McCarthy drove this point home. We heard from the moment Nikki Haley dropped out that Joe Biden needs to capture that Nikki Haley voter. That speech last night did not speak to the Nikki Haley voter. This was a speech, to your point, Jimmy, of riling up the base.
Yeah, that's what it was. So he was, you know, I had kind of framed this for our listeners yesterday, like he was auditioning to stay on the ticket last night. He needed to shore up that percentage of the ticket before he could start making maybe a general election pitch, because that wasn't a general election pitch. Again, the most important issues in the general election didn't come up until he was done with shrinkflation at the 52-minute mark. Like, if you would have told me shrinkflation would have batted earlier in the lineup than the Ricky Henderson of issues right now, which is the border, that was strategically done by his people to cater to his base. They wanted that good early 30 minutes to rally the base and go, see, he doesn't have dementia, all the fun stuff. So I think from that standpoint, it was a success for him, a step back for the country. But here's what I want to ask you, Pyro, because I've had nobody to talk about this with yet, because I was up all night watching it and I got on a 5 a.m. flight. The response to the State of the Union. Okay, I watched it. I haven't seen the channel with the sound on. I've just been watching you with the sound off on my plane, and then I watched a little Fox and Friends so I could heckle Brian Brenberg. I paid for the Wi-Fi just so I could text Brian Brenberg disparaging things about his hit.
Sure.
That's the kind of friend I am. But stick with me. Are people on the channels – are we pretending Katie Britt did a good job? Like, how are we framing this as a channel right now?
I'm sorry, the signal's breaking up. I can't hear Jimmy anymore. I need to – no, look, I will say, just scrolling through Twitter and reading some things online from some people that are on the channel with some frequency, I think there were some questions as to the performance aspect of the speech.
Yeah. We agree with all of it. I agree with all of it.
I described it as a sweet, motherly tone.
You know what the tone was, Todd, for real? Because I agreed with her substantively. I did. But it was performed with the energy of a girl who has blue hair and films a TikTok in a Subaru. Okay? Like, that's what it looked like. It looked like – meaning not substantively. It was the opposite of that substantively. I just mean the tone and tenor looked like something libs of TikTok would repost. Like, look at this unhinged delivery. But, you know, substantively, she did fine. And the people who hate it truly hate it because they disagree with it. It's not because of her tone. I'm just in a performance space because I'm about to go on stage in front of 1,000 people, and I got to pull my life together, Pyro.
Understood. And I want to get to that performance in a second for you, but just – tie in the loose ends here on Katie Britt for a second. There was one part, and I know this is a comedy radio show in most respects, and I don't want to drag it down, but when she was talking about one of the stories of one of the individuals that she met and was talking about the horrific things that were done to that little girl when she was 12 years old. I thought that was the best part of her delivery because it was so natural, and all those emotions that she was emoting were real.
You
can't say those things without feeling that. But, you know, look, for argument's sake, there are a number of people who are questioning the performance. I liked it. Maybe I am a hyper-partisan, Jimmy. But speaking of hyper-partisans, you were down in Florida.
Yeah, okay.
And I will say that my mom is in your general area, and she was at a theater that was promoting your appearance, and from what I'm told, Jimmy Fallon is all over the place down throughout the entire state of Florida. Billboards as far as the eye can see.
Yeah, but I didn't know your mom was down here. I got to go get some singles. I kid.
Hey, come on.
Hey,
Jimmy.
Bang. That was for my listeners. I know they appreciated that. I kid. No, that's amazing. And yes, I've got strong representation on the I-95 billboards right now. And I guess that was designed to keep me awake for the drive from Fort Lauderdale to Ponte Vedra tomorrow. Because I have one of those drives, right, where essentially Jacksonville is the Ponte Vedra airport. But because it's not a trendy flight from, like, Lauderdale that short, you have to fly to Atlanta or Charlotte and then make a U-turn and fly back to the airport you just passed on the way, which I can't as an efficient person. Like, the dude doesn't abide, so I'm just taking, like, a four-hour road trip to have some fun.
Are you serious?
Yeah, what would you do? Are you going to fly? Are you going to go to an airport an hour early for a
your decision. Okay. I'm questioning, like, the powers that be who book you at these things, they can't come up with a better route for you? Or is the powers be you?
These two these things are too close together. So absent pulling a DB Cooper and just jumping out the plane door halfway to Ponte Vedra, I don't really have a lot of options here. So I run a good car and just beat the life out of it. It's
what
like
do you
I
do?
Am when I go on the road, I'm the garage attendant in Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Sure. You take it up that hill, then you take it down that hill, and you break that sucker. When Cameron was in Egypt's land, let my people go. So I feel like we've never talked about this. I mean, we talked before and during, sometimes during your hits on my show. What do you do in your free time when you are you're doing these gigs? Because they're all late at night. Sometimes you have two shows. Sometimes you have three. But there's a huge gap when you land at a lot of these places if you're not driving 4 hours like you are today. Yeah. So what do you do?
Right now I am in the downtown cigar bar. I'm smoking a 64 Padron. I'm getting ready to go tape something for Sean Hannity on the beach here in Fort Lauderdale. And there's like it's always functional. It's usually either, you know, a combination of a – oh, my God, are you right, Cam? It's either a combination of, like, I visit a radio affiliate or I'll either visit a radio affiliate to smoke a cigar. But the bartender here just wiped out completely. She might be dead. Cam, are you going to live?
Yeah.
That's amazing. Oh, there you go. So I just witnessed a wipeout, like, that would have made for, like, a viral video if I wasn't calling into the radio show. But, yeah, Todd, it's essentially food. So today I went to a place called Java and Jam.
Sure.
And then I came up here, had a stogie, and now I got to go find Hannity in a little bit. So it's a bender. And then I have to be at the show for soundcheck at, like, 6 o'clock. So it's a little busier than it looks.
You are relentless. Like, we all know you as the hardest-working guy in the building. A lot of people say – people are saying, hardest working man in show business. But, like, you actually, I've seen you, and the example that I always use is the Patriot Awards 2022, when you did your set before the awards, killed it. They had the awards. You were there for it. I then think you gambled and drank. Oh, because we had the party with, like, sales.
Yep.
You attended that for, like, a couple hours, closed out that sucker. Then you went, gambled, drank, did whatever you're doing. You were on our set. You were the best guest that day. You didn't sleep. You were in the same outfit you wore, not only during the set, but then all night when you were gambling and drinking and doing your cigar thing, and you killed it. And that's the Jimmy we know and love.
Listen, man, it's a bender, and you want to know something? A lot of the audience is cheering on the description right now. There are people out there genuinely concerned because this is not – it doesn't sound healthy, but that's how it went down. You know, by the way, I never told you this about the Patriot Awards. The great Chris Olivares, he was the Border Patrol helicopter guy who got a Patriot Award for patrolling the – he and I wound up in the casino together at like 3:30 in the morning with his Patriot Award. And we hit such a bad run at a blackjack table. I've never done this in my life. I've never been the one with the ability to walk away in a gambling situation. For the sake of his Patriot Award, because I thought we were going to wind up having to pawn the trophy, I'm like, I can't be seen on a casino camera selling a Patriot Award as a Fox Nation employee. So I'm like, why don't we just go back to the garage and turn some tricks and keep it classy?
I mean, that's how you do it. That's how you were trained when you were driving cabs. It's always the turn tricks approach. That's always the fail safe at the end of the night. This is obviously your show. I don't know if you've ever taken 30 seconds to a minute to talk about what it's like to be playing real venues right now.
Oh, wow.
And how far you've come. Because that's what my mom said. She goes, Todd, this is a real venue. Like, there's thousands of people. I was like, yeah, Jimmy's pretty big. So talk about that. How big this moment is. Take some time on your own show to brag, Jimbo.
Listen to Jimbo. Well, here's the whole thing. So most of your life in comedy, as you know, you're the guy who goes on before the guy they've actually heard of. You know what I'm saying? For most of your career, you're actually the guy who goes on before the guy they haven't heard of, if we're going to be technical, because 99% of comedy headliners you haven't heard of, they're just good enough to close the show. So the jump from that to this in the last 2 years, I really truly do mean it. It's the coolest thing about being me is that when you want to get into comedy when you're starting out, you want to cultivate your own following and walk on stage to people who legitimately are there for you. That's the most rewarding feeling you get, is the first 2 seconds when you walk on stage and you get punched in the face by that vibe. Like, it's a very welcoming vibe, but it's also like, it's really weird, but our show is like very much a movement because, you know, the energy of this show is so ridiculous. And it's like it has like this cathartic purpose in the life of everybody who consumes it. So my stand-up shows, it's like a revival. You know those religious revivals?
Right.
The only difference is like I don't tell them the apocalypse is coming and they need to send me a lot of money. Although I should probably look into that, right? Don't those guys make money?
I mean, that is the next evolution of this. I want to go to one of your shows, see you doing that from high on the podium. I want to see people falling into water. If I don't see that
tonight. I'm going to open tonight with the asteroid is coming.
Let's be clear about one thing. This has been fun. I appreciate you letting me do this, but I look forward to getting back to some sense of normalcy when you're the host of your show and I am a mere guest participating in the aura of all that is one, Jimmy Fallon.
You crush it. You do great, so stop it. I appreciate the humble nature with which you occupy the chair. You're the best.
The stations love you. Your boys have given me the countdown. You know what that means. Have a great show tonight. Enjoy your time with Hannity. Thanks again for letting me fill in. You're the best. You deserve every measure of your success because you work so gosh darn hard. Jimmy Fallon, our friend, the host of this show. Kill it tonight. More Fox Across America after this.
He's the host you shouldn't get too close to.
A lot of things about me you don't know anything about, Daddy. Things you wouldn't understand. Things you couldn't understand. Things you shouldn't understand.
Fox Across America with Jimmy Fallon.
You are listening to Fox Across America. I am Todd Pyro in for the great Jimmy Fallon. And joining us by phone, a caller, Daniel from Dayton, Ohio. And Daniel, before we get to your thoughts, just want to let you know that the person who's responsible for partially getting me into this business, an anchor there by the name of Chris Long, used to be from Dayton, Ohio. So I don't know how old you are. You may remember Chris Long, but if you don't like me, blame him. Daniel, what's on your mind?
Hey, Todd, I'm 100% disabled vet. I thank you for taking over for Jimmy today. Please give me a little bit of time. I'm going to make it crystal clear, but I'm going to start right here. First of all, Kamala Harris, who he pointed out, first black, you know, female president. And then you have Mayorkas, first Latin border czar. Then you have Pete Buttigieg, first gay cabinet member, openly gay. And then there's another one. But my point is the Secretary of Defense, he had to come out of retirement. Every one of those has cost us from, you know, where was he when he was missing in action, when he was sick. And I wish him all the best. But every one of them, Buttigieg with the shortage of material, the L.A. ports, every single one of them is a joke. OK, we need they call it reproductive rights. No, you're killing babies. Reproduce means reproductive. OK, those are the same word. So when you look at the border, what about the gotaways? That's an invasion. That's not immigration. We just decide to throw up our hands. So he wants to hire another 1,500 agents. Okay, it's like you got a little fire extinguisher in the kitchen.
Yeah,
that's to keep it. That's to put the fire out now.
Hey, Daniel,
the fire get out of control.
We're running up against a hard break. I want to thank you for your service to our country and say I don't care. I think a lot of Americans don't care about all that background stuff as long as you can do the job. Those people that you mentioned can't. More Fox Across America after this. You are listening to Fox Across America here on a very busy Friday afternoon in our great country of the United States of America. I am Todd Pyro, host of Fox and Friends First, alongside the lovely Carly Shimkus every morning from 5 a.m. to 6 a.m. And I'm in for the great Jimmy Fallon. Jimmy joining us a little bit earlier. Lexi Rigdon, famed attorney, joining us now. Lexi, thank you so much for being on the program. It is awesome to have you on. We're going to take a little break from all the State of the Union shenanigans that we've been getting into. And we're going to talk about As the World Turns down there in Atlanta, because it is a soap opera, and it is at a whole nother level of soap opera-ness just in the last 24 hours. Like, if you think, I don't need to listen to Lexi or Todd, I know everything that's been going on, I just, you know, I'm caught up. You're not caught up, because this case has more twists and turns than the Autobahn. So I'm going to give you the floor. Where are we in this saga on Friday at 1:35 Eastern?
That is so funny. It's so true. And I love being called a famed attorney. So every time we're on together, you can do that from here on out. This is quite a saga, and it is appropriate to compare it to a soap opera because that's really what it is. So just to give basically for anybody who's been living under a rock, a 60,000 foot overview of this is that Fani Willis is a district attorney who indicted Trump, and she appointed a special prosecutor to help her on the case. He's been paid handsomely. He's been paid hundreds of thousands on the case. And as it turns out, they have been dating secretly this entire time, and it is very likely that the affair that they were having predated his appointment to the case. They traveled the world together. They spent money on vacations, which can't be proven that anybody reimbursed anybody, so it looked like he was taking her out on his dime, and there is this raging conflict now. So as you know, there were many, many days of hearings, and we are waiting on Judge McAfee to make a decision about whether she and her entire office, including Wade, are disqualified from this case. And while we wait, there are more issues between them, because this is kind of like the least of her problems. She's a lawyer, and lawyers are not allowed to lie to the court, do shady stuff, for lack of a more eloquent term. And so she's not only being investigated by the Senate of Georgia, but she also is going to have an ethics issue with the Georgia State Bar. Now, they were going to actually – the county of Fulton, Georgia, was going to ethically investigate her, and they said recently they don't have jurisdiction to do it because she's not a county employee. She's a constitutionally appointed employee. But either way, we won't get into the weeds on that. She is going to be investigated by the appropriate ethics board as well. So this entire thing is a complete and total mess, and I've been saying it from the beginning. What they should have done the night before the hearing started, when they knew this is really going to happen now, there's no way to stop this. We submitted our pleadings that said we were basically innocent. The judge didn't buy it. Now we're going to have to testify about the nitty-gritty of our personal life. They should have stepped down. And at that point, they could have saved face and said, this is for the good of the prosecution, even though we all know that wouldn't have been why. But they didn't. Their unbelievable hubris and disrespect of the court, especially Fani Willis, is just an unbelievable turn of events.
Let's talk about what's happened within the last 24 hours, maybe 48, but I think it's 24. Mm-hmm. There are reports that the judge in this case is going to be primaried by someone who you could say might be on Fani Willis's side. And the insinuation is that this is a message being sent to the judge to influence his ruling. Basically, if you take down Fani Willis, we're going to take down you in the election. Get into a little bit more detail on that, if you could, Lexi.
Well, what's funny about that is it's somebody named Robert Petillo, and he has been on Fox News. And I mean,
I've interviewed him.
I've been on with him. And when I saw the story about it, I sent it to you. I saw the story, and it said, you know, there's a challenger to Judge McAfee. I click on it, and the link is Robert, me, Mike Emanuel, and Fox News Night. And I thought, wow, okay. So it's a small world, of course, but this is a blue district, and so the concern here is that he's now in the running, and it's an overwhelmingly Biden-favoring district, and that because now McAfee's not going to be unopposed, then there is a theory that McAfee might be, because he's human like anyone else, scared to make a ruling against Fani Willis, who I believe is still popular in the district with the voters, because most of them are blue, and they're Biden supporters, and they voted for her. So with McAfee being primaried, depending on what decision he makes, it could be a problem. I mean, up until I think yesterday, he was unopposed. And so that would have probably made it much easier for him to make a decision and not worry about his place on the judiciary. But the problem is, I mean, in New Jersey, where I live, judges are appointed. They're not elected. And, you know, you could say that the judges are in bed with politicians to try to get appointed. But I think having voters make the call on who's on the bench is – that is just unbelievably weird to me, for lack of a better term. It just doesn't seem right, because then the voters kind of almost control in some ways what the judges do, especially when there's maybe a close call like this, or maybe a judge doesn't want to leave office. And I think Judge McAfee has done a lovely job. His demeanor's great. He seems very even-handed. I don't think that he is a hardcore liberal judge like some of the judges we have, like Judge Chutkin or Judge Engoron. But he's probably a little bit worried about his job now, too.
Yeah, I think you raise a lot of really good points, including that juxtaposition of Jersey to the states where you vote in judges. Voting in judges, I grew up in Jersey as well. It just seems weird. It's not what we grew up with, and it doesn't feel right. A couple thoughts, though, on Petillo. I like Robert a lot. You know, I exchange messages with Robert about story ideas from the Democratic perspective. You know, full disclosure, I don't like this move if it is a political move, which all indications, again, I haven't spoken to Robert about this, all indications are that it does appear to be. But Here's my takeaway on this, and I think you said he's doing a beautiful job. I would say of all the judges that we talk about in the news, we often talk about their insane bias. Whatever Orgeron was doing on the stand, that's not judging. That is hyper-partisanship. This gentleman, Judge McAfee, seems to be doing a very above-board job. He seems to be taking the evidence as it is coming in and evaluating it, but also making sure that he's making evidentiary decisions that are fair. He is doing what a judge is supposed to do, which is go right down the middle and make fair decisions. So with that as the backdrop, I just cannot imagine him sullying his reputation if, in fact, let's face it, he might lose anyway. And I don't think he would want to sully his reputation by making a partisan decision that, quite frankly, in our political world, ticks off both sides. Because, you know, he's a young guy. Just because he would leave a judgeship, forced or not, doesn't mean it's the end of his political career. I think a lot of people are watching this case from afar and saying, this guy's a really fair judge. He's probably going to be a great lawyer. Why don't we hire him? And I think it would be career malpractice for him to upset both sides. I wonder, you agree with me on that? Or
I totally agree with you. And hopefully, you know, I say judges are human, but hopefully the people that are actually running in judicial elections, not just him, they don't make decisions based on what the electorate is going to think. And let's face it, he's been so high profile through this that even if for some reason Robert Petillo does become Judge Robert Petillo at the end of the day, McAfee could probably write his own ticket in terms of his post-bench career, and it's not the end of the road. He could always get reelected. It's just another factor in this. And another one that I was thinking about is something that sort of came up in the course of the arguments is that if Fannie Willis is disqualified, then what does this do to all the other indictments that she has brought? And there was a question I think that Judge McAfee asked about that is, it, like, is this going to affect all of those as well if she's disqualified and it's determined that she lied under oath, et cetera? So I don't envy him. He's got a lot on his plate with this case.
Okay, I'm going to get really wonky here, and let's not spend too much time on it, but I want to follow up. I can see a carve-out for the Trump case just because she hired Nathan Wade for the Trump case. But
exactly.
To your overall point of, you know, complete disqualification from every case she's ever been involved in, aren't there enough other people in her office that aren't disqualified, that haven't done something like perjure themselves on the stand, that have signed documents so that her entire record could not be thrown out? You see where I'm going here?
Oh, yeah. And I don't think that it necessarily would be. I just think it might make a lot of work because you have defense attorneys and you have people that are in custody or people who want to get rid of something. And especially the ones who are in custody and have nothing but time, they might say, hey, you know, I think you should, you know, file a motion to dismiss the indictment. She was already disqualified from the other case. She lied under oath. You know, maybe she has some type of that was out there in the ether that it might just be more work for the court in the future if she is actually disqualified with a flood of other people coming in and saying, hey, we want the indictment thrown out because she's crooked. So I don't think it would necessarily be successful, but it would certainly make a lot of work for the judiciary. Although I don't think Judge McAfee does not seem like the type who is going to decide anything based on his own personal preferences or, you know, the extra workload that the judiciary might have. He seems really like a pretty even-keeled guy who's been very measured and reasonable in his responses to what's gone on.
Boy, you just peeled another layer of this onion back talking about every case that Fannie Willis has ever covered. I'm going to, in law school, this is a quick little backstory to the folks listening. In law school, you do things called hypotheticals, where you create hypotheticals, fact pattern, and then you evaluate the fact pattern. We're going to do that right now with the esteemed Lexi Rigdon, lawyer here.
Yes.
Okay, let's say, despite everything that we just talked about, McAfee says Fannie Willis can stay. The legislature there in Georgia says we find no problems with anything that Fannie Willis has done. Did I say McAfee? Mm-hmm. I meant Fannie Willis can stay. Let's just say all those things fall in Fannie's favor, except the bar. Mm-hmm. How can she remain a prosecutor if she doesn't have a bar card?
Well, she can't. I mean, if she were disbarred for lying under oath, which I think is and perjury, I think it is very clear that the affair started before his appointment and that they both lied about it. They got caught with their pants down, literally, in this scenario. she's not going to be able to practice law if she gets disbarred. So she'll be done. But I can imagine the disbarment, if it would even go that far, and that's a big if, is not a short process either. So I don't know what happens to the case in the interim. I mean, if she's not disqualified, then the case continues. I don't believe that he's going to dismiss the indictment for other reasons. If she stays on, the indictment stays and the case proceeds. And then ultimately, if it does wind its way to a trial, then it's just up to the jury at that point. But she's not going to be able to be a prosecutor or a lawyer if she has problems with the bar. And doesn't necessarily have to be disbarment either. You can be reprimanded, censored, suspended. There are a lot of steps prior to disbarment.
And the political game on this is not just involving the judges here. We mentioned Petillo and McAfee, or Petillo running for McAfee's judge spot, but also Fonnie Willis is getting, I guess the word is primaried, or getting some opponents here in future elections, mm-hmm. because people are seeing, you know, maybe Fonnie's not best for Fulton County. The reason everybody cares about this, if this were, you know, a random shoplifting, we wouldn't be talking about this on Fox Across America. The reason we're talking right. about it is because it involves one of the two candidates for president in 2024. Looking ahead and knowing local courts, this isn't a federal case. This is a local state case. And I understand you practice in Jersey and Pennsylvania and not necessarily Georgia. But
yeah.
We're at, what's today, the 8th of March. We're going to get a decision potentially in this case by the 15th. What happens timeline-wise with the Georgia case against Trump? Give us some scenarios.
Well, I was thinking that if the judge does actually uphold her staying in the case, then the Trump team, or maybe some of the others, Michael Roman, whose attorney had initially brought this motion, they might appeal it. And I don't know if the case gets stayed pending an appeal on that issue, but in order to try a 17-man, because I think a few of them have pleaded, but if they wanted to do it all together, which they said they did, in order to try a multi-defendant RICO case, and a RICO case as complicated as it is, I can't imagine that happens in any type of quick time. I can't imagine that happens before November. Certainly if we were in New Jersey, that wouldn't be happening before November. Nobody's in custody, so there's not necessarily a clock ticking. And people, I mean, it's just an unbelievable logistical nightmare to get everybody's schedules in line. And then also, even if the trial were to start tomorrow, good luck picking a jury. Good luck picking a jury in any type of reasonable time frame. So I know that Fonnie Willis had said, we're going to do this really quickly and we're going to do it before the election, et cetera. I don't personally see that happening. Although I hate to make bets on anything, because if we had heard this 6 months ago, that we would be involved in this literal soap opera with Fonnie Willis and her special prosecutor, nobody would have believed it. It would have been too far-fetched to even believe. So I think we've all learned we can't take bets in any of these Trump cases.
It makes you wonder, Lexi, what is coming down the pike next? Because, like you said, no idea that this – and we were looking at this year like, oh, my God, it's going to be crazy. The most random things are going to happen. Well, right off the bat in January, the most random thing happened in one of the cases. Who knows what's going to happen in all the rest. Lexi Rigdon, thank you so much for spending so much time with me. I know you bill by the hour. We were talking for, I think, 15 minutes. That's a quarter of an hour.
Yes, that's a 0.3. I will send you the
whoa,
bill.
Whoa, 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 0.3? That's a 0.25.
You got to round up. You got to round up.
Come on,
see,
Rigdon.
See, as item as specific as that was, that's how Nathan Wade should have been with his billing entries. No block billing. You got to itemize. That's one of the problems.
Way to tie it all together. Lexi Rigdon, thanks so much for your legal insight.
Thank you, Todd.
Have a great weekend. More Fox Across America after this.
A show that's taking orders from the big man upstairs.
We're on a mission from God.
This is Fox Across America with Jimmy Failla.
You are listening to Fox Across America. I am Todd Pyro in for the great Jimmy Failla. And if I ever get my own radio show, and this isn't a plug to the bosses, or maybe it is, I want to have a segment called I Hate Sports. Sports are trying to kill me. And in this latest iteration, I'd like to report on a story that is making its way in the X-verse, formerly known as the Twitterverse. Russell Wilson meeting with my New York football Giants. Why? Michael, Josh, weigh in. You're also Giants fans. Why are they trying to kill us?
Yeah, Todd, I don't know. I mean, I think You know, they described it, I think Adam Schefter did, as like an exploratory meeting or whatever he said. So I feel like it's just them kind of trying to kick the tires on this and seeing if paying him the veterans minimum would be worth it. But then I guess you're in a tough place because then does he go in competing with Jones for the job? I know Jones recovered from an injury, but you're putting them in that spot where it's like now Jones feels the pressure because Russell Wilson's won a Super Bowl. So, you know, regardless of how he's been the past few years, you're still going to have that pressure coming in.
Are you rebuilding or not? I mean, I guess that's the question. And, you know, Sean Payton, his ex-coach, who they literally want to kill each other, according to sources. They don't like each other. But Sean Payton's comes out of that Giants mold, right? So if we're doing the way the Giants do things, Russell Wilson doesn't seem like he'd be a fit. Am I wrong?
I think it's just a matter of they're doing their due diligence here. Daniel Jones is coming back from that ACL. And, you know, if you can get him on the cheap, you're not the one that has to take the $85 million cap hit. So I think it's okay in that if it's a very, very short-term deal.
Right.
Long-term, forget it.
Yep.
Or get it.
And he showed flashes last year, Todd. I mean, he did in certain games, but I don't know. I mean, it'd be a big risk, I think.
I don't know what I'm more upset about. The state of our union or the state of our Giants? We'll debate more when Fox Across America returns right after this.
Live from Everywhere USA, it's Fox Across America with Jimmy Failla.
You're listening to Fox Across America. I am your fill-in host, Todd Patrick Pyro from Fox and Friends First. 5 to 6 a.m. each weekday morning alongside the lovely, the talented, my friend, Carly Shimkus. And today, I am in for my friend, Jimmy Failla, who's down there in Florida in front of a huge crowd doing the stand-up comedy game proud. If you're in the area, I don't even know if you can get tickets, but if you can, make sure you go. Jimmy's the man. He puts on a great show for you every afternoon, 12 to 3 Eastern. He's going to put a great show on for you down there in Florida or wherever you catch him. Speaking of shows, last night, the one we refer to as the State of the Union, or as I like to refer to it, the Campaign of the Union, Get Off My Lawn speech, took place in front of a live studio audience there on Capitol Hill, broadcast throughout the nation. I am curious to see what the numbers are in terms of the number of people that ended up watching the State of the Union, because when I did a little MOS, that's jargon for man on the street, on Wednesday, and I asked people, are you going to watch? We got a lot of no's. We got a lot of no's in liberal New York, in a place where, quite frankly, the sense I got after the no's, there were some curses that we couldn't air, but it was a lot of, I don't care. And that is bad for the president of the United States, because if people don't care, that means they're probably not happy. And it means they're probably hungry for an alternative. And that alternative, as the president well knows, is Donald J. Trump. You have an alternative to listening to me right now. It's my friend and colleague, Joe Concha from Fox Contributing. Does that make sense, Joe? You're from Fox Contributing?
No, never heard it ever introduced that way before.
I was a little bit nervous we didn't have you there, and I kind of flipped through that intro. So let's get to what I wanted to talk to you about.
Sure.
Am I the only one who breathed a sigh of relief last night when Joe Biden invoked John Lewis, that he didn't ask him to stand up and be recognized?
Oh, so you had a sigh of relief on that one.
Yeah, when he said John Lewis, I was just like, uh-oh, he's going to ask him to stand. He's going to go to shake his hand.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, John Lewis passed away in 2020.
That's right, Baltimore. Let's see. I mean, it could have happened maybe, but no, you know why? Because the whole thing was scripted,
okay.
And I don't know if we talked about this before. We did on Fox and Friends First. It feels like 3 days ago. But everybody who's saying, wow, see, he's fine. He's got his fastball. He's got vigor. He had passion. He didn't have any gaffes, you know, relatively anyway. All he had to do was read a teleprompter. You do that every day. I do it on occasion. It ain't that hard. Right. And particularly when he's been off for basically a week, he was in Camp David for nearly 5 days practicing this speech. So he got up there And because he did it loudly, and because he stayed on script for the most part, and the one time he went off in any meaningful way, Todd, we saw what happened.
Yeah.
Lincoln Riley instead of Lakin Riley, and he had the name right next to him on there. So let's see a press conference and him go through that for 80 minutes and see how that goes, or an interview one-on-one with somebody who's remotely a halfway journalist. It would not go well. So I don't think this shows anything, and I don't think the needle moves at all. This was a speech for the MSNBC, CNN, New York Times, latte-slipping crowd, and not the types of independence blue-collar workers that he needs in places like Michigan, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, Ohio, Nevada, Arizona, Georgia.
I'm glad you mentioned two things. One, I'm glad you mentioned MSNBC. We're going to get to some sound bites from them in a hot second. But two, I'm glad you mentioned the teleprompter thing, because if I practiced on my reads, as we call them,
yes,
in the news business, for a week, every single read I have for Fox and Friends First would be perfect. And the introduction to Joe Concha that I just did would have been a lot better than it was.
Did you even have one written down, though?
No, I have nothing written down. And
yeah,
they told me you were ready a little bit into my monologue, and I kind of wanted to come up with something crafty, and I objectively failed. But speaking of failure, I want to go through three sound bites with you in the time that we have. Two are from quote-unquote Republicans on MSNBC, and we all know when you're a Republican, you go on MSNBC, you become worse than Democrats. And the last one's from a Democrat, and I honestly, truly believe in my heart of hearts, I think you're going to agree, the Democrat has more rational points than the Republicans in these sound bites, because the Republicans have none. Cue up quote-unquote Republican number one, Joe Scarborough, clip number 22.
Joe Biden proved, I think, he still has a pulse. That's number one. And Speaker Mike Johnson might have rolled his eyes more than both my daughters in their entire lives. What's your take?
Well, I mean, had a pulse. He had Frazier's left hook. I mean, I have never seen. And part of this is delivery. Part of it is speech writing. Part of it is setting up the argument for the fall. I've sat through a lot of these, and I have never seen one side put in so many uncomfortable positions as the Republicans were last night.
Because unity, Joe.
Oh, you know, Joe has to say that. That's the other Joe. I'm not talking Biden. I'm not talking Concha or DiMaggio or Piscopo or Tory, or we could keep going down the Joes. But Scarborough, he's doing that show now basically for an audience of one. Because Joe Biden reportedly watches Morning Joe on a daily basis. And then on a regular basis, Joe speaks to Joe, as in Scarborough speaks to Biden. And, you know, I bet you most people, even in our building, couldn't tell you who the current chief of staff is these days. It's been a long day for the president, right? Like, what's his name? It doesn't matter, because it really is Joe Scarborough. So when you hear that sort of analysis, it wouldn't have mattered how last night went. You know, he was going to get the bouquet of flowers thrown up onto the stage from Scarborough, from The View, just because the bar is so low that that's considered success at this point. That gets you an A+.
By the way, the listeners are getting the benefit of when Fox News administration decides to put the people who work the morning shift on the afternoon shift.
Right.
Not going to lie. Joe and I are basically Joe and Kamala right now, and I may start cackling, and Joe may start talking about corn pop. So get ready, America. We are not on our game right now.
Did you watch the speech last night also?
No, I am pretty religious, unless it's the Giants in the Super Bowl, which I don't have to worry about for a really long time. I got to stick to the sleep schedule, and then I catch it when I wake up, and I do my prep as I'm listening to it. So I prep, listen to it. But
because
I listened to the whole thing, yeah.
I stayed up, and then I had to file a column after. Like, then I had to write the column, file the column. So I'm on, like, 2 hours maybe at this point. And yeah, it really does impact you after a while, doesn't it?
Yeah, again, I may refer to you as somebody else. We'll see how the next 10 minutes goes. Speaking of somebody who used to be something, again, Nicole Wallace, used to be a Republican. Now she's a Republican. I always joke, like, I'm the center for the Knicks. She took it to a whole new level on the MSNBC. Roll clip 20.
This was his "How about them apple" speech for me. I mean, we've watched this before. I think that grabbing the room by, you know, he started with World War II and the Civil War and rooted the threat facing our country from my predecessor in those two, you know, epic battles. And then he quoted Ronald Reagan. It was like a punch in the face to every Republican in the room.
But unity, Joe, let's punch the Republicans in the face. Remember, on the steps of the Capitol during the inauguration, he talked about bringing the country together. And here we have Nicole Wallace celebrating what was a campaign speech. They make no apologies for the fact that it was a campaign speech, by the way, when we all know it's not supposed to be that. It's supposed to be a State of the Union, not a state of the Biden campaign. But then she goes on to say, a punch in the face to every Republican in the room. Boy, the unity is just, it feels so great, Joe.
It really was like the DNC last night, right? That was the Democratic National Convention. Fast forward to Chicago. I guess that was the preview. And that's what we hear from Nicole Wallace's world. And remember, when you say Republican, Joe Scarborough served in the House of Representatives. Nicole Wallace was the communications director for the George W. Bush White House. But this just shows you that these people will say these things, even if half the time they don't believe them, because that's what gets them their next contract, Todd, right? They have to say these things, because if you go against a grain on any of these programs, you are a pariah. You saw what happened with Meghan McCain, who's no Trumper by any means, the way she was treated by The View. Greta Van Susteren, who was once with Fox, then went to MSNBC. I don't think people remember this because it was so short. She lasted 5 months because she actually tried to do a centrist program. And that audience is like, that ain't happening here, all right? Unless you're 110% anti-Republican, we're not going to swallow it. So that's just the business model over there. And it gives us nice sound bites to respond to. But honestly, either they're drinking the Kool-Aid that much and they want to conform, so the environment is more uncomfortable when they do go to the break room because they went after Trump harder than the next guy or gal. I just don't believe that they believe half the stuff they say. I really don't.
And you touched upon something that the next soundbite touches upon. And wouldn't you know it, it comes from a Democrat, an Obama administration guy who, in his defense, has called it right down the middle as he sees it. So you got to give him credit for that, for sticking to his principles. It's clip number 21. It's David Axelrod. Listen.
I knew you were going to say that.
I think he had a strong night, and I think he had a strong night in part because of the economic agenda that he outlined. He's going to hit the road now. In any State of the Union speech, the audience is limited. What you want to do is then take it out on the road. Yeah. He's going to the swing states. He's going to take, hopefully he'll emphasize the economic piece. And the only thing that I would say is I still think that if you ask people who watch the speech, the triumphalism about where the economy is today is probably not matching their move.
And look, a lot of the folks driving, listening to the program right now, I know you don't agree with the statement from Axelrod that Joe Biden had a strong night. I know you don't agree with the opinion here that you like Joe Biden's economic agenda. But kudos to David Axelrod for pointing out that key phrase at the end. The triumphalism about where the economy is today in that speech is probably not matching what is in reality in America. And that's the key, Joe Concha.
The president last night declared, quote, "Our economy is the envy of the world. Our inflation is the lowest in the world." So Axelrod is saying, be careful with that, because people, particularly when they buy food, which is almost a daily thing, they're not seeing it. And 3.1% inflation, let's explain what this means again. All right. Inflation was at 9%. Now it's at 3%. So you could say, oh, it's falling. No, it's not falling, because it was 1.3% when Joe Biden took office. So still nearly three times as high than the rate it was when Joe Biden took office and Donald Trump exited. Let's put it this way. Todd, let's say I gain 50 pounds in a year. And Mrs. Concha says, yeah, look, this isn't what I signed up for. You got to start losing weight. Okay? So then the following year, I only gained 20. I say, hey, honey, look, I'm losing weight. I gained 51 year and I only gained 20 the next. She's like, what are you talking about? You're still getting fatter just because you're not gaining weight as fast. That doesn't mean you're losing weight. That's what the White House tries to spin this as. Oh, inflation's falling. No, it's not. It's just not going up as fast. Oh, crime is falling. No, it's not. You're grabbing the highest number that it was under your administration. And since it's a little below that, you're saying that therefore crime is falling. No, look at a number from, say, 5 years ago. That's your benchmark as far as whether crime is falling or not. So when they keep saying these things, they can play with the stats, and the fact checkers kind of have to say, well, I guess it's true they're saying that when it's really not. When you tell people, you know, it's raining and you're really spitting in their face, that's what happened last night. And that's why I don't think this moves the needle, because they were painting a utopia as far as the way things are going in this country. And people just feel it on the ground. They know otherwise.
What I like about Axelrod, and I like about this statement, and I like about how he's approached this administration, he's calling it like he sees it. And, you know, that soundbite we just played wasn't all positive for Joe Biden.
Yeah.
You can have opinions that maybe don't go in lockstep with your party. I've heard a number of Republicans that did not like Katie Britt's speech last night. We are entitled to have different opinions on certain things. But what we should all be able to get behind is lying. And when Axelrod has given advice to the Biden administration, Mr. Unity, Mr. I'm just a general old is that my alarm or yours, Joe Conchi?
Mine. I got to do yours. A recording for Fox News Radio or something after this. But
we'll get him on that, boys. but to the point I'm trying to make here, when Axelrod was honest with Joe Biden and says, here are the things you need to do, Mr. Unity, Mr. Kumbaya, I love everybody, I'm the nicest guy in D.C., Joe Biden attacked him, called him vicious names, and that underscores the fakeness. That's the point. The fakeness of Joe Biden. Everybody says, oh, he's a sympathizer in chief. If you're the sympathizer in chief, maybe you remember the one name you had to remember yesterday and not call her the name of the USC football coach. Maybe you meet with the Gold Star families. Maybe you talk to individuals who are going through really, really tough times, and not just talk to people that are the darlings of the far left agenda. Final thoughts to you, Joe Concha.
Sure. No, Axelrod, could give him credit, right? Because he used to advise presidents. And when you're a good advisor, you tell the president the good and the bad, because that's the only way they're going to learn from their mistakes or correct course, right? And Joe Biden didn't correct course in any way, shape, or form, which tells you about the people that are around him at this point. They probably either hide information from him or tell him what he wants to hear, because they know they can program him. And if he believes it, he could sell it better. So that's one point. As far as Lakin Riley is concerned, the reason why the president screwed that up, because it was an impromptu, right? But then what he said after, he said to her parents, I say my heart goes out to you. Having lost children myself, I understand. If your heart goes out to him, Mr. President, maybe when this happened days and days ago, you would have picked up a phone and called the parents yourself and not be shamed into it by a Republican congresswoman, and then just to fire back, you screw up the name, and then you just do a half-hearted, oh, you know, my condolences go out to you. No, that should have been a private conversation. And that should be the main takeaway from last night. You're right, the phoniness. Joe Biden, they say, like, Scranton Joe, he's down to earth, he's a people's man. I think that his actions prove otherwise. And again, he could have announced executive orders, Todd, around border wall construction, remain in Mexico. That's how you solve the border crisis. You don't wait for Congress. He could get those things done and make a significant impact right now. And it ain't happening. So again, always judge a leader on their actions, not their words. Always judge a radio host, however, on their words, because there really are no actions that he could take or she.
Let me be clear. If you want prime Joe Concha and Todd Pyro, tune in about 5:55 on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays a.m. If you want happy hour, Joe and Pyro, you got it just now. Joe Concha, have a great weekend. Get to that alarm on your phone. Make sure you do what you need to do. We will as well. Joe Concha, thank you. More Fox Across America after this.
The show that's crashing the establishment party.
I don't recall seeing your name on the guest list.
Nothing to be embarrassed about. I sometimes go by my maiden name.
You're listening to Fox Across America with Jimmy Failla.
This is Todd Pyro in for Jimmy Failla on your Friday. And coming up, we have a very special treat. What if I told you the guest coming up used to work in Hollywood as an actress, but now she works for somebody who just ran for president after previously working for somebody who was president. I'm going to give you some time to type all that into your AI, see if you can figure out who it is. I'm not going to tell you the name. You're going to have to stick around. Maybe you're driving. Stick around. You have 5 more minutes. Don't go inside the house. Stay on the roads a little bit longer. Wait till you hear who we have. I think it's going to be an insightful discussion when Fox Across America returns. You're listening to Fox Across America. I am Todd Pyro in for Jimmy Failla. Thank you for joining me today while your intrepid host is out doing the comedy thing there in Florida. I certainly appreciate you sticking with me. And right now, I'm very excited to introduce you to somebody I've never spoken with before on TV or radio. It's a young lady by the name of Caroline Sunshine. Awesome name, even wackier background. Is it okay, Caroline, if I call your background wacky?
How are you? Let's have some fun. Tell the people what's up.
Okay, so here's the deal. You may, if you're of a certain age, recognize that name. Why? Because Caroline was an actress in a number of programs. So yeah, she was there ensconced in liberal Hollywood, but then she makes a break and starts getting into Republican politics. Ends up working for the President of the United States, Donald J. Trump. Then most recently working with Vivek Ramaswamy on his campaign. You know, look, I get asked a lot, how did you go from law to this thing, this TV thing? I feel like the parallels are pretty similar between both of those professions. But for you, Caroline, to go from liberal Hollywood to conservative politics, how the heck did you do it?
No, it's true. You're right. So I did. I worked as an actress for the Disney Channel, of all places. That was my American dream, was to be an actress, to be on television, to you know, perform. And I played a Russian foreign exchange student on a Disney Channel series. And then I did have the honor of serving in President Trump's White House. So I always say I'm the closest thing there ever was to Russian collusion.
That's a great line. That is a really solid line. So before we get into the news of the day, just because I'm sure once the audience heard that background, they're curious as to what your experience in Hollywood was with the things that, quite frankly, we at Fox and others talk about, the liberalness of Hollywood, the anti-family values of Hollywood. Talk a little bit about if that was your experience, because I don't know if it was your experience. What was it for you, Caroline?
I think I was thinking about this with the Oscars coming up, because growing up as a little girl, the Oscars were my Super Bowl. You know, I just loved watching the Oscars and tuning in, and it was so aspirational and inspirational to me. And then, you know, of course, working on the Disney Channel for a long time, that company was very family focused, and I was actually so proud to work on series that I felt parents could allow their children to watch those series and know that it was sort of a, I hate to use the word safe space, but there was a safe place of entertainment for their children. And boy, in the last, you know, it's probably been, you know, the last 5 to 7 years now, have you just seen that all turn right on its head? I think the Oscars are absolutely unbearable to watch. I mean, who wants to turn into an award show to hear some bad Trump jokes and be told you're a racist and hear some films you've never heard of? And then same thing with children's content, which I think is much more nefarious, but our children don't really have content anymore that isn't pushing an agenda on them constantly. And I think it's so nefarious to use something as innocent as content for children and use it as a platform to push ideology. So let's be honest, create nothing but chaos and confusion for them. It's really actually evil. And I think at some point Hollywood should really wake up to Hollywood's always been a bottom line town. You know, at some point this is a money-making endeavor, and you just look at the ratings continue to sink. You go, who's watching this content? I don't know, maybe the, you know, small percentage of, you know, liberal white women who buy Ibram X. Kendi books at Target. I don't know, but there's a much larger audience out there that they just continue to shun and hate, and it's to their own detriment. It's really, it's a stupid endeavor.
But I think that's what concerns me the most, because if there was a financial gain to be had by going 100% woke with all of your content, I wouldn't agree with it. I would fight back against it, but at least I would understand it. It seems that woke Hollywood and the forces of wokeness that try to indoctrinate our children, they're not even doing it for financial gain. They're doing it for some other reason. And whether that's control of our children to control their minds for what's going to happen in their lives in the future, part of a grand plan, or just because, to use your word, they're evil, that is disturbing to me. So yeah, I would almost feel better if they were making trillions of dollars on it, you know, Caroline?
Absolutely. You know, we always say politics is downstream of culture. And I think conservatives have always lagged behind the left, particularly in recent years, of being as aggressive in that space. I'm hoping that it's somewhat changing, but there's really much more to be done there. But politics is downstream of culture, and the left has always understood that. And Hollywood, for better or for worse, is still the megaphone of culture in this country. And if you control the culture, you sort of control the future in a way.
Such great points. You mentioned the Super Bowl in your earlier answer. Last night was Joe Biden's Super Bowl. Caroline, did he win or lose?
Oh, did anybody even watch? Lose. Oh my gosh. You know, I talked to several people who I like to talk to people. You know, I work in politics, but I like to talk to people who don't. I like to talk to real Americans, I guess you could say. But, you know, a lot of my family and friends are just patriotic Americans. They don't work in politics. They, you know, they follow what's going on, but they love their country and they're just good, hardworking people. And I always just like to get their take. So many of them said that they turned it off like 10 to 15 minutes in because they just couldn't stand it. And they just thought, what a waste of time, you know? And I mean, President Biden couldn't even say Lake and Riley's name last night. And when he finally did, he mispronounced it, calling her Lincoln Riley. And it's not like anybody in that chamber cared, because earlier in the day, you'd had 170 of those Democrats who were in the audience vote against the Lake and Riley Security Act. So, and you know, then I did, as you mentioned, have the pleasure of working for President Trump and serving him. And I was so proud. I remember going back to his State of the Union. It's like a tale of two commanders in chief. But if you may remember this, during one of President Trump's State of the Union addresses, he brought home Sergeant First Class Townsend Williams, who had been deployed to Afghanistan. And he was on his fourth deployment to the Middle East at the time. And he brought him home in the middle of the State of the Union speech to surprise his wife and his two young children. And then last night, Joe Biden, here's more names that he didn't say, right? Couldn't say Lake and Riley's name correctly. I'm sure if it was George Floyd, it would have been a completely different story. All the Democrats would have been taking a knee in Kenzie Cloth. And, you know, it would have been the George Floyd, you know, show, if you will. We would have sung the Black National Anthem at the beginning, whole deal. But point is, another name he didn't say last night was Lance Corporal Kareem Nakui. And there's a reason for that, because Lance Corporal Nakui was one of the 13 Marines who were killed during Biden's withdrawal of Afghanistan. And last night, his father was a guest in the audience, and Biden had him removed when he understandably was upset for Biden not drawing attention to his son and his son's sacrifice. And so take a look, America. That is the commander-in-chief. Look at how they treat the troops. One of them elevates and honors the sacrifice and service of a family. The other one can't say his name, and when the father is upset that his son understandably gave his life for this country, Biden says, you're disrupting the show. Get out.
Yeah. The sad thing is, you're obviously speaking about isolated incidents involving Joe Biden, but this is the new Democratic Party. And it's sad because, look, you were born in the Clinton administration. Obviously, I don't expect you to remember much about it, but even Bill Clinton, I think, would have acknowledged the service and sacrifice of these individuals. And the Democratic Party of this day and age has just gone off the deep end when it comes to just being human and acknowledging things that they should. And every single thing they do is for partisan reasons. While I have you on, let's be realistic. I've been looking at the guest list here. Everybody is old, 40 or older. And your host is 45. This is a old man and old woman day, except for you. And that's important. You were born, like I said, in 1995. your friends are young. They're going to be voting in this election. When you talk to your friends, especially your friends that are either independent, uncommitted, or Democrat, what are they telling you? Is there any enthusiasm for Joe Biden? Are they going to vote for Joe Biden just because they hate Donald Trump? Are they going to give Donald Trump another chance? What are you hearing from the youth? Because let's be real, in these swing states, the swing states are not decided by hundreds of thousands of votes. They're decided by tens of thousands of votes.
No, you're absolutely right. Look, I mean, in addition to working in a very liberal industry, I also went to a very liberal arts college called Claremont McKenna College in California. And, you know, a lot of my cohort of colleagues have gone on to be that, late 20s demo that works in New York City and buys every woke, you know, Starbucks product that's out there, whatever it is. And I think to a certain extent, that demographic is, you know, is far gone. There's just a different reality that they are consuming every day. Again, going back to the left controlling culture and politics being downstream from it. But I think they're miserable, to tell you the truth. I think while identity politics has been a successful political strategy for the Democrats largely, I think what is happening is pendulums do always swing. Unfortunately, a lot of people are usually collateral damage before they swing. And that is certainly what I think is happening with young people in America. I think they've bought the lies that they've been sold, but I think it's starting to make them deeply miserable, actually, particularly young women and young men. And I think the misery, you know, as a human being, once you feel that in your soul and your heart, it's very hard to ignore. And there was a very interesting poll that came out, series of polls that came out a couple of weeks ago, showing that the gap between Joe Biden and President Trump was closing. And some people may be surprised to see that. I was not entirely shocked. I did have the pleasure of working on Vivek Ramaswamy's campaign, and boy, was there somebody who really knew how to tap into to young voters. I mean, it was just overwhelming to see the number of 17, 18, 19, 20, 21-year-olds that we would have showing up to political events at 10 a.m. on a Tuesday. I mean, that is any political campaign's dream. And the message that Vivek was so eloquently able to communicate to young voters, I think was speaking to their soul, was speaking to that misery that they're all starting to realize, which is that when you buy the lies of woke identity politics, it doesn't make you happy. And not only that, in the Declaration of Independence, you're promised the right to your life, your liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Boy, has it become hard to pursue your happiness in the United States under Joe Biden. You have young people who are looking to buy homes, and the interest rates are at what, you know, 7%. Meanwhile, you got California saying, hey, if you're an illegal immigrant, we'll give you the loans for free. So if I'm a young person in America, I would say, why bother going to college? Why bother trying to get your first home and working hard and being a law-abiding, you know, contributing patriot? How about this? Just go across the southern border, come across, you'll get free college, and then after that, you'll get a free home loan, you know? So I just think at a certain point, we may finally be at a tipping point where even if they're not communicating it directly just yet, the misery is setting in. And I think fear and misery often are better motivators when it comes to voting a lot of times than love, if you will. And there is a chance that you're seeing the first fractures in the young blue wall, if you will.
Real insightful comments there on the swing in the youth vote that we're seeing in the polls. Now, none of this matters if the polls don't sort of bear themselves out on November 5th. But the main area where we've seen a swing in the numbers is with the Hispanic vote. And that swing has been insane to be down so much in the 2020 election with Hispanics, and then to have a polling for Donald Trump 6 points above, that alone will win the swing states if it comes to pass. But there's also some movement there with the African-American voters. I did a little man on the street interview just this past Wednesday, and, you know, it was in New York City, a liberal bastion. I get it. But the lack of interest in Joe Biden from African-Americans and the support of Trump, much to Charles Barkley's chagrin, the support of Trump from African-Americans was palpable. If Donald Trump can get the trifecta of African-Americans, Hispanics, and the young, and he can sort of hold serve with women, he wins this election going away. And I think that's the dream scenario for Donald Trump. Before we let you go, did Joe Biden say anything last night to undo those gains by Trump in those three categories I just mentioned?
Did he say anything to undo it? No. I think the truth is like a lion, and you set it free and it defends itself. And the truth of who Joe Biden is and the way he leads this nation was on full display last night. And I guess I would say, you know, keep putting the guy in front of the camera. Keep letting him do speeches. Keep putting him out there because it's not working. It's not working. And at the end of the day, I think outside of all your identity politics games, people have eyeballs and ears, and their voters are a lot smarter than you give them credit for. And people, I'll put it this way. I think the woke are waking up. How about that?
And let's be real. If Joe Biden can't spend all week prepping in front of a teleprompter for a speech, I think it's going to come out like we've seen speeches and ad libs come out over the course of, you know, the last 3.5 years, if not the last 50 years. Final question before I let you go. I held this one for the end because this is the journalist in me asking the tough question. Will Vivek Ramaswamy be Donald J. Trump's vice president?
Great question. I think Vivek, what he shares with President Trump is they're both patriots who love this country so much. And look, being in the political arena, boy, is it tough. And especially if you're on the right side of the aisle and don't have a friendly mainstream media doing your bidding every day. Let's be honest, the political arena is a rough place to be. It's a huge sacrifice. And I think what he shares with President Trump is it is a sacrifice for them to be in the political arena. They have great lives, wonderful families, very successful men. They don't have to do this. They're in this arena because of a love of country. And I think Vivek is sort of a refounder of sorts. He really right. reminds me of a modern founding father. And I think he wants to serve this movement, this MAGA movement, sure. These people in any way that he can and do Understood. Everything that he can to get Donald Trump elected.
We got to run. Karine Jean-Pierre, that's how you give an evasive answer on whether somebody's going to do something. Caroline Sunshine, thank you for your time. Certainly appreciate it. More Fox Across America after this.
The show that connects you to people in high places.
It's like the most important man in the world standing here, and you got a conversation going with each other.
Fox Across America with Jimmy Failla.
Before we go here on a Friday, a programming note for your lives. Yep, this is that weekend in March where you got to spring forward. You lose that hour of sleep. Now, growing up, I hated this week. I always loved the one in October because you got that hour of sleep. But now with kids, I'm just going to be frank. I don't know what to feel anymore because I'm told the one in October is bad for you if you have kids. But how is this one good for me if I have kids? I'm still not sleeping. It doesn't matter the day. I give up. I don't know which end is up when it comes to daylight saving time. All I know is in local news they yell at you if you put the S. It's not daylight savings. It's daylight saving. Anyway, irregardless, as they say in Boston, go out there and make it a great weekend. Set your clock forward. If you're a parent, I'm sorry. I don't have any guidance for you if this is good or bad. All I can say is thank you for inviting me into your homes, into your cars, wherever you are listening to Fox Across America. This has been Todd Pyro from Fox and Friends First, 5 to 6 a.m. every weekday morning in for my friend Jimmy Failla. Go out there and make it a great weekend, everybody. Bye-bye, everybody.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network. Subscribe and listen to the Trey Gowdy Podcast. Former federal prosecutor and four-term U.S. congressman from South Carolina brings you a one-of-a-kind podcast. Subscribe and listen now by going to foxnewspodcasts.com. Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.